not necessarily following directions. You know, and I found the interaction between a character like hers, which is a little bit like me, that usually is quite centered in an inner life, disregarding the body, so to speak. And then all of a sudden, at a certain age, the body starts demanding its own attention. And I have to say that as much as it was painful to write, it was also a joy, you know, to realize how, you know, what it is to be human in some ways.
There's actually like a range of women of different ages within the book. Mm-hmm. There's a young girl who's a teenager, and there's Alia's mother, mm-hmm. who's very elderly, and then her neighbors, who are a range of ages. And I really like that aspect, all these different aspects of age in women.
Mm-hmm. And I also loved the relationship, particularly of the three women in who are friends, you know, across professions, ages, and everything, who have remained friends for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. When you're writing about Alia's thoughts, she mentions the phrase unnecessary appendage. Can you talk about how that phrase applies to her?
Yes. Primarily, that phrase and the title of the book comes from the Holocaust, really, and what happened to the great writer Bruno Schulz, which is for quite a number of people, they were kept alive because they served a purpose. So Bruno Schulz was kept alive for a little bit because he was a wonderful artist, and the Nazi leader at the time decided that this man should paint his children's mural in the bedroom. So he was classified as a necessary Jew and not sent to the camps. It didn't save him for long. He was shot a little bit later. But what I was interested in, Alia, the narrator, goes on about it, is what makes someone necessary or unnecessary? And I was interested by this thing where we believe that someone's necessity directly involves functioning or what you contribute to society. And what if that contribution is not quite evident?
And are you referring to her work, her personal
work? Her work. But I'm also, I'm interested in the whole idea as to what is the value of a life. You know, if I had I made her like one of her idols, you know, Kafka, who had somewhat of a similar life, except that he wrote great books. We consider his life, of course, very necessary and worthy. But what if somebody didn't? You know, what if we did as he asked for, which is not publish most of his books? Would we consider his life necessary? Or how valuable do we think it is? And she desperately tries to not just create a value in her of her life, she tries to make it sort of a work of art. You know, so I always think that what she does is in some ways performance art, not necessarily to be seen by an audience, but to be seen by life in general.
And what she does is she translates books into Arabic, mm-hmm. and she has some self-imposed rules, mm-hmm. about that.
I mean, she chooses to translate certain books. She refuses to translate them directly from French or from English, but she does not know any other languages. So she uses translations of translations. And there are many reasons for doing that. The most important is that she, in some ways, continues to distance herself from life in general. And she, there's a constant reference that she keeps on about, which is that this is not her work. This is someone else's work that she is working with. And I love that, you know. So, you know, we could look at it as a metaphor for how she chooses to live her life.
You're listening to Rabi Alameddin talking about his new book, An Unnecessary Woman, on Between the Covers. We take a minute now to hear from Lynn and Conch, who will talk with you about supporting Between the Covers and this membership drive.
Absolutely. We want you to support Between the Covers and this membership drive. The number to call to support this station on the cover, between the covers, and KBOO 877-500-5266. Just go ahead and call right now.
And it's really fascinating to have Rabbi Al-Medin in the studio. He's one of the Middle East's most celebrated voices. His international bestseller, The Hawakati, was a big seller. And we've got his new book, An Unnecessary Woman. It's the enchanting story of a book-loving, obsessive 72-year-old unnecessary woman. The amount to get a copy of this book along with your membership to KBOO is $75, which can be distributed on a monthly basis, $6.25. That's a fantastic way to become a member of KBOO by calling 877-500-KBOO. That's 877-500-5266. If you've got enough to become a $10 a month member of KBOO, we have a, I think it's a 2 gig flash drive that's available with an incredible amount of programming, just dozens and dozens and dozens of hours of artists and activists and academics, writers and thinkers, amazing people. Pete Seeger, you heard a special that ended just a few minutes ago about Pete Seeger, real tribute to him. We have an exclusive Pete Seeger appearance on KBOO. That it's a 1969 interview with Pete Seeger. That was a year after KBOO first went on the air. 1969 interview. It's amazing, with the young and dynamic activist, singer, and rabble-rouser. Is exclusively available on this flash drive. $10 a month will get you that. Tom Hartman, speaking at PALS in November 2013, is on it as well. Move to Amend to talk about corporate personhood in Portland, Saving Main Street from Wall Street, panel discussion on the history of the gay press in Portland, and the full 12-program series of KBOO History that we aired last year during our 45th anniversary. So many speakers and thinkers, Bell Hooks, Ken Kesey, we can't even mention them all. Paul Robeson, W.E.B. Du Bois, Dick Gregory. This is something that you will want, because you can just plug it in to whatever device that you have, and you've got months of incredible content courtesy of KBOO that will keep you entertained and enlightened. It starts with you calling 877-500-KBOO. That's 877-500-5266.
Absolutely. And, you know, we give you between the covers. We don't have like little 5-minute sound bites about authors. We do in-depth interviews. And quite often, when I've done interviews, and Conch and Kathleen, people are like stunned that we actually read the book. People do that here. We read the book and then we do an in-depth interview. It's interesting. It's informative. It really lets you know whether you want to, you know, shell out the money to whatever source you get your books from to read such a thing. We love to deal with authors here at KBOO, and they generally really like to have us too. And to keep that tradition going, to help keep the radio station going, call 877-500-5266 and make your donation. Get a fancy dancy gift, or just call in and give us some money, because that's the other thing. We actually need that to pay the electricity, to pay our meager little 6-person staff. That's what we use your money extremely wisely. We are the soul of frugality here. 877-500-5266 is the number. We appreciate your hard-earned money, and we use it wisely. 877-500-5266. I want to thank Rick in Northeast Portland, who called and renewed. Thank you, Rick. Call, and we can't wait to thank you on the air. 877-500-5266. And I want to get back to this interview Kathleen Stevenson is doing with Rabbi
Al-Medin.
Welcome back to Between the Covers. My guest is Rabbi Al-Medin. We're talking about his new book, An Unnecessary Woman, the story of a most interesting woman named Alia. We should say that she did work in a bookstore for many years.
Yes.
And her apartment would seem to be crowded with books.
Yes.
So there is just this sort of literary feeling to the book. I mean,
in most ways, the book is about the pleasure of books themselves. It's about, you know, she wanted to live a literary life dedicated to it. And I love that. I've always loved that. So that it's funny because in the back of my mind the whole time was, how do you make a recluse's life interesting? And how you do that is by showing that life. And her life was all about books. It was all about books.
Right. And there's so many literary references within the book. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, how was it for you to work in those literary references? How did that work for you?
Well, I'm not that far. I'm not that different from her. She probably has read more than me, and she probably has a better memory than I do. But I read a lot, and I put notations throughout the books. It was funny because I had more trouble in what to keep in. When I first started, there were a lot more references. I mean, you know, she'd open her eyes, there'd be a reference. And simply because, you know, I read a lot and I enjoy it. And I thought, you know, she would reference, you know, this poem about waking up in the morning. But I had to cut them out because it got to be ridiculous after a while.
Yeah, I started to make a list for myself because there are many people that she references that I'm not familiar with, and I have to go back and keep plugging away at making that list.
And it's funny because I could say that, you know, someone could read this book and then have a list for me that would have writers that I haven't heard about that would be appropriate for her, you know, and because there's just so many. And in my mind, one of my happiest thing is that some people have begun to put a list of all these writers that I think are great and they haven't heard of. I mean, what could be more pleasurable? So many more books to read.
She has many opinions about these books too. Mm-hmm. Did you give her some of your own preferences, or did you try to figure out what, given her personality, which ones, how she would?
Both. Uh-huh. I did, you know, she dislikes some writers that I actually, I wouldn't say I dislike, but I don't have that strong of an opinion that I thought she would. She loves some writers that I think are not necessarily my favorites, because we're different. There's also the best example I could give is I'm a big fan of Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian, and it's I thought about it for a long time. It is not mentioned in the book, but I thought about it for a long time, and I realized that she probably would appreciate it as a, you know, great book, but she probably wouldn't like it as much as I do. Because for one thing, there are no women in the book whatsoever. So, you know, she might appreciate it, but she wouldn't be turned on by it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't mention it. Mm-hmm. You know, so things like that.
One of the things I realized in reading this book is my own ignorance of the history of Lebanon and Beirut. But you do, through her life, and she's 72, and so she's experienced a lot. And so we get a picture of what life was like for this one person in Lebanon during that time. And I'm just wondering what that was about for you. I mean, was it just a sort of place her in that context, or did you have other?
I definitely wanted to place her in that context. I definitely wanted it to be Beirut because it's a city that I kind of know. It's important because so many things have happened there, lots of history, and so she lives in it. What I was also interested in that, since particularly in the beginning, she does not have any relationships with people. Her primary relationship is with books and with the apartment that she lives in, which happens to be in the city. So Beirut then becomes a character in that she interacts with constantly. And I was interested in that. This is sort of my fifth book, and most of them are somewhat set in Beirut. I was not interested in what I call being a tourist guide. Mm-hmm. You know, taking someone's hand and going like, oh, and on this street you have. But she lives in the city, and she primarily also, she's a walker. So I had to bring the city not necessarily exactly to life, but bring a city to life, mm-hmm. you know, where she lives. And I enjoyed that.
And there's an aspect to it that's almost, I mean, she is aging, and as you said, you know, she's dealing with these different aspects of aging that are like loss or defeat, I think she calls it. And the city has experienced so much change and loss, mm-hmm. so there's this interchange of that in her life.
I mean, one of the things that I was interested in is this is not just in Beirut. I noticed that, as an example, as I age, and I'm still a lot younger, I have a lot of, I get angry with younger people until, you know, I have to pull back and realize, of course, this is, you know, partly jealousy, partly bitterness, and partly because they don't appreciate the things that I appreciated. So the same things I attack in my mind, younger people, I also attack the changes in the city. Mm-hmm. That, you know, all these new buildings are coming up, and but every generation has gone through the same thing. Mm-hmm. For her, all the changes in the city are not necessarily for the best. She hates most of them anyway. You know, and I actually don't know anybody of a certain generation who does not hate the changes in the city they're living in. I mean, this is what in some ways, what makes a book readable for me is that it might be about this one character in Beirut. It's a unique character in a unique city, but there also has to be some of it that transcends that, and it becomes, you know, every character in every city.
She has one relationship that she writes about in the past with Hana, and that seems to be the relationship that was close for her, and that character is very interesting in that where Alia is so withdrawn and solitary and sad, kind of.
The difference, one of the main differences is one is what I would call inner directed and the other is outer directed. Mm-hmm. And then there's another thing that I'm interested in. It's the whole issue of, I believe that to go on living, we have to delude ourselves, you know, that whether that what we're doing is important, or that whatever we're doing matters, or that sometimes I think we delude ourselves into thinking that people care. Whatever it is, the thing that I like about the relationship and also with the other women is that each of the women deludes herself in a different way. In the women's case, it's primarily, I thought it was interesting because I believe that, you know, I delude myself constantly, you know, that, and the choice of how I lie to myself is extremely interesting. I mean, the biggest lie is usually I'm not aging, I'm still 20. Mm-hmm. Or the biggest lie is I'm never going to die, for sure.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I know that it's not true, but to be able to wake up every morning, I have to lie to myself, and we all do that. So it's, what are the choices that we, you know, what do we choose to lie about to ourselves is what I'm interested in.
I'm speaking with Rabi Alameddine. We're talking about his new book, An Unnecessary Woman. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers. And now we'll hear from Lynn and Conch, who will talk to you about supporting Between the Covers in this membership drive, and maybe taking advantage of this offer to get this book, An Unnecessary Woman, for your thank you gift.
Absolutely. And this is, the book is Unnecessary Woman, but your contributions to KBOO are extremely necessary. And one way to start doing it, it's easy to do, 877-500-5266. If you're on a landline, just tack a little one on front of that, 877-500-5266. And for a $75 minimum contribution, you too can have a copy of An Unnecessary Woman by Rabi Alameddine. And it's a great book. It's also a very great cause to give money to KBOO. We need your donations. You become a member then. It's not just a cup of coffee that got thrown away or some meal that will be digested and then relieved. This is a contribution to a living institution. KBOO, 877 877- 500-5266. This morning we are having two segments of, we actually interview authors about books. I know, isn't that amazing?
I've been just totally rapt listening to Kathleen Stevenson. She's been doing this for years and years, and I fall completely into these interviews because she just does such a great job of getting this information from these authors and artists.
Absolutely. And call 877-500-5266 to continue that. We also have this amazing KBOO 4-gig flash drive that is full of...
It's 4 gigs, not just 2.
It's 4 gigs.
Wow.
We've doubled our gig size on the flash drive for this membership drive.
Giggity-giggity-goo,
1969 interview with Pete Seeger, which is an exclusive KBOO availability for this on the flash drive. We've got some stuff from Tom Hartman, Susan Faludi, Margaret Mead, Molly Ivins. These are all people who have been, these are from the treasures from our archives. For 45 years, we have been interviewing the best and the greatest. Paul Robeson, W.E.B. Du Bois, Daniel Berrigan, Dick Gregory, the great Dick Gregory, Ward Churchill, Stokely Carmichael, Eldridge Cleaver, John Trudell, Vananda Shiva, and Winona LaDuke. The list goes on, and it's a 4-gig flash drive for your, for like 10 bucks a month. You can have this little puppy to ship around. Send it to your right-wing relatives. That's always a fun thing to do. These are, we like to give you gifts with purpose. 877-500-5266, because we certainly make your contribution we make great purpose out of that. We do things like pay the electric bill. We do things like keep our transmitter going. That's kind of important. We want to also, we have all sorts of, we need to keep our website up to date. We need to keep archived things. There's all sorts of stuff we need to do with your money. Big vacations and yachts are not one of them. 877-500-5266.
But if you're going on a vacation and need something to read, why not get your own copy of Rabih Alameddine's book, the hardcover copy of An Unnecessary Woman, an enchanting story of a book-loving, obsessive 72-year-old, quote, unnecessary woman. Rabih Alameddine is one of the Middle East's most celebrated voices, so you can get a copy of that right now by calling 877-500-KBOO. Now let's hear more about that book with Kathleen Stevenson interviewing Rabih Alameddine.
We're coming to the end of the interview, and is there something that I haven't quite caught about this book that you think would be important to say?
No, actually, we've talked quite a bit. We can talk about the three women, my favorite subject.
Oh, really?
It's funny, because like I said, when I said that it's how we delude ourselves. What I'm interested, or what I thought was fascinating, is the character of Fadia, the owner of the building, who in some ways is completely delusional.
Oh.
And she's the happiest. but not in a bad or a destructive way. This is what she chose. So it's interesting to look at how much truth we tell ourselves and how many lies we do, and what is the right balance for a happy life.
Talk for a minute about, I mean, what her situation is.
Well, she was the daughter of the owner of the building, and she inherits the building. I don't know, I mean, I haven't measured how dominant she is in the book, but for me, in my mind, she's very dominant. She's a strong character, and her strength comes from a completely different, shall we say, source than Alia's. She's vain. She's a gossip. She's social, shall we say. She's the opposite of Alia. Yet, she has a strength that is very comparable to Alia. That in some ways, these women do more than just survive in a tough world. And they don't conquer it. They just live it. They live their life to the best of their ability. And, you know, one of the things when I'm writing a book is trying to figure out which characters do I fall in love with. And I realize with this book that it's all of them, all of them. You know, even the poor schmuck of a husband. Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, God, the poor guy.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking about this book coming into KBOO, and I did enjoy it very much, so thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about my book, so it's always a pleasure.
Okay. I've been speaking with Rabi Alameddine, and the title of the book is An Unnecessary Woman. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers on KBOO Portland.
On Thursday, February 6th, Africa Oyé will help kick off our winter membership drive with a live broadcast from Mississippi Records. Dr. Zahm will return to hosting the first show of each month and will be joined by special guest DJs spinning the tracks. Mississippi Records is located at the corner of North Albina and Sumner and will start up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So, tune in from 2 to 4, February 6th, and don't forget to support your local source for the finest in freeform radio, KBOO Portland.
Ago, four lads from Liverpool invaded America.
You say you will love me if I have to go. You'll be thinking of me. Somehow I will know.
Join KBOO February 7th from noon to 4 as we pay tribute to John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
Sound all right? Good morning and welcome to the February edition of Black Book Talk. We're starting off on a bluesy note because this is a bluesy topic, or it can be. Our guest today is attorney Lester L. Barclay. He is the managing partner of the Barclay Law Group in Chicago, but more importantly, he is the author of The African-American Guide to Divorce and Drama. And so we want to talk to him about this. I mean, hopefully in this month of Valentine's Day, you'll be avoiding this. But just in case you need this information, we've got him here for you. With me this morning is...
Oh, just fine. This is O.B. Hill, and I'd like to say it's Black History Month.
That's true, too. We're hoping your relationships won't be history, but Attorney Barclay, how are you doing? Welcome to Black Book Talk.
Fine. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to share with your listeners this morning.
Great. Tell us what motivated you to write this book. What's your background? What's your interests? Why a book on divorce and breaking up without breaking down?
Well, I've been a lawyer for almost 30 years and primarily have practiced in the area of divorce law. We now call it matrimonial law. But I wanted to fill an information gap that was available to African Americans about divorce and its aftermath. As in many aspects of our lives, Black folks, we meet special challenges when it comes to divorce that are culturally based, and I wanted to write a book that spoke to those specific issues.
You know, I was wondering about that. Speak a little more about the specific cultural issues for African Americans.
Well, when you look at our family structure, we're probably the only true ethnic group that has a matriarchy. That is, African-American women often are better educated than men. They're higher wage earners. And as a result, the dynamic shift when you are separating and ending a relationship or a marriage. And so the person who may sometimes be the primary breadwinner may not be the male figure. As well, you have to look at the role of the African American church and its influence on marriage and the family and divorce. The reticence of African Americans to seek therapy, which certainly could help prevent divorce and would help some of us through our marital relationship issues, particularly African American men. We tend to get our therapy at the barbershop on Saturday mornings, rather than going to talk with someone who's trained to assist us. When you look at the high incidence of domestic violence, high school dropout rates, non-college bound students, the high rate of male and now female incarceration in our community, the black male shortage, the high rate of single parent families, these are some of the issues that distinguish our community from the mainstream.
Okay, yes.
Does this derive from a history of slavery and incarceration?
One could argue that during the time of slavery, marriage was seen as something that was well sought after by African Americans. Of course, you know the myth side to that, which is, you know, you have to have jumped the broom in order to validate a marriage. So black folks sought to have their marriages validated through the mainstream. Unfortunately, legally, we weren't allowed to get married. And so the African American community, we have a high regard for the institution of marriage.
Absolutely. You know something, the book group that I have at my library recently read a book called Free Men, and it is about an enslaved man who was freed, lived in Philadelphia, and upon hearing that the war was over, just left everything, left every comfort he might have had, turned around to walk 1,000 miles back to Mississippi to find his wife. I shoot that in there because we don't see, I don't think, enough images now of black folks being in love. I mean, sure, you know, we get divorced, this happens too. But the other side of it is that we don't see, you know, the romance, the sweetness, and the genuine love between African Americans. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, because those images are not out there, especially for our young people, that they don't have the kind of guideline to follow. I mean, those of us who came up during the 60s and 70s, the Smokey Robinson kind of romantic period, at least we knew that there was a concept. And when I look around now, I'm thinking, in addition to everything else, our young people don't really even have that image to hold on to.
That's right. You know, it's so much more, it seems trashier now.
Oh, it is trashier.
But marriage was something in our community, and a church wedding, no doubt.
Yep.
People sought validation if the minister gave his blessing to the couple and got them off to a fresh start. You know, you would go and you would ask for someone's hand in marriage, and you would ask, could I marry your daughter? Those days seem to be long gone.